This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We delve into the profound analysis recently released by GIUSA, reflecting on the political crisis of what they call bourgeoisie representation following the recent elections. And GIUSA, which is a stalwart in advocating for workers' rights, has also highlighted key insights into the implications of these elections for the class struggle, governance matters as well, and the workers' movement here in South Africa. Joining us to unravel these complexities is our next guest, President of GIUSA, Mamitle Sibe, who joins us to give us his perspective, bringing a wealth of experience and expertise in really understanding labor dynamics and political discourse in our society. Mr. Sibe, a pleasure to have you on the program this morning.
A pleasure to be here, and thank you and your listeners.
So the recent elections are deemed significant by GIUSA. Can you elaborate on what makes these past elections so pivotal for understanding the ruling capitalist class and the ongoing class struggle in the country?
Well, I think as you have correctly pointed out, our main perspective is that this election does bring home the crisis of the bourgeois political representation, because for 30 years, ANC has been very instrumental in maintaining a political economic architecture for management of capitalism in this country. It is the only party, if you like, on the mainstream politics that has the acceptance, particularly of the black working class masses. And this party has been overwhelmingly rejected by the, you know, by the masses of the black working class, who have elevated it to, I mean, to elections after elections since 1994. I mean, you look at what they represent, not only in terms of the fraction of the people that have voted, where they've fallen far well below 50%, which no any other poll actually estimated. People estimated between 43 to 45, and so on. They fall, you know, below 41%. But what is even more important is the fact that today, they actually represent a pitiful 13% of eligible voters in this country. And every other party next to them, every major party of, you know, the bourgeois class, have also lost in this election. And DA is no different. You see, although the DA has increased its representation in parliament, it is because of the level of abstinence of the masses. I mean, you know, the millions that have not bothered to register, and those that have registered who actually stayed away by a great margin, I think 16 million of them, and so on. Now, that is telling in terms of where does the working class, where does the majority of the population stand in relation to all the major political parties and, of course, the political system of the ruling class in this country. And I thought DA might have increased their vote, but actually, they've lost 100,000 votes in this election. What they gained mainly was a very right-wing, you know, white vote that they previously lost to Freedom Front. And that is not serving them good, by the way. It's actually complicating the situation from the point of view of the bourgeois class, because it's exactly the reason that today many people within the ANC are in open revolt at the idea of the ANC entering into coalition with the DA that is anchoring the government of national unity. But more than that, the fall of the DA vote between 2014 and 2024 is actually 500,000 votes less than what they got in those elections.
Mm-hmm. But how do you perceive the impact of these elections on democracy, specifically in the country, particularly concerning representation and the voices of the working class?
Look, one thing that is most remarkable about this election, obviously, as many analysts have pointed out, is the absence of an organized political intervention on the part of the working class. There was no party that came out of the working class movement that stood in this election that had a program, both for the immediate needs that could connect with the issues raised in many struggles that are taking place in this country, as well as, presenting any genuine socialist alternative to the crisis of the capitalist system and a crisis faced by the great majority of the working class and so on. And I think that is a key feature that confront leadership of the workers' movement and that all of us must reckon with to ensure that it doesn't repeat itself.
In your reflections, Giusa also mentions the failure to create a buffer class, if you will. What does this concept entail, and how does it influence the dynamics between the ruling class and the working class?
You see, the thing is, the two main classes in society that under capitalism that are constantly engaged in struggle is the bourgeois class and, of course, you know, the working class. But what in other societies you would normally happen is you have a sizable middle class that, you know, the working class, I mean, the bourgeois class is able to actually shower with all sorts of privilege and therefore enlist their support as a social base of the parties, the programs, and the ideas that then advance the interests of the monopoly capitalist, which is a tiny elite of society. I mean, I don't think in this country people that really count for billionaires would even feel a buzz. And these are people who own the economy, who own the land, and who control the vast and enormous institutions of power in society. And I think the problem here in South Africa is that is mainly white, 30 years into democracy, and predominantly foreign. And what they have not been able and succeeded in doing is a creation of the black industrialist class. And that's the reason that anyone who, you know, passes for a genuine black businessman, I mean, you can almost count them, you know, with your finger, right? The rest is a entrepreneurial class that depend on the looting and the plundering of the state. Now, that create a crisis of legitimacy because many people realize the racial and the cultural gulf that separate the ownership of the means of production and the economy and the vast majority of the population in this country that is overwhelmingly black, and therefore do not in any way think that there is a historical legitimacy for a continued monopolization of the vast sections of the economy, of the land ownership that remains overwhelmingly white, and you know, therefore the system of the exploitation. That is a challenge that the capitalist class face in this country. And that's the reason that the opposition to monopoly capitalism is not limited to the working class. Mm. Unlike other capitalist societies, right? You see, and that's what you see in the phenomenon of the EFF and the, you know, MK parties, that even sections of the black elite are repelled by the historical injustice that basically the economy, the land, is monopolized by the class that is alien from them culturally, racially, and nationally.
So the national dialogue has been a recent focal point for political discourse. What is Giusa's attitude towards this initiative? And what role do you envision for the workers and movement in really shaping national policies through such a dialogue?
Well, we don't think that those dialogues are going to solve anything fundamental. Mm. If anything, is a cynical attempt to create legitimacy to the alliance between the ANC and the DA, which is what this government of national unity is really about, which, as you have seen, was brought about a relentless pressure, and I must add, a profoundly undemocratic pressure from the monopoly capitalists, who, using a so-called market, which they've mystified, into a law of nature, when what we have in the so-called market is a naked and the brutal class interest of that tiny elite of the monopoly capitalists that own the key sectors of the economy and the land in this country. And what then, through the national dialogue, they'll try and do is to get the buy-in of the workers' movement and other popular organizations of the working class in order to boost the legitimacy of this government of national unity, which, when you look just on the social media, is rejected by the overwhelming majority of people. So as Giusa, we obviously reject that and will oppose that. But of course, we'll have to shape our exact tactic depending on how the masses of the working class view it. Because what you can't rule out is that despite the DA policies, its neoliberal, its anti-working class policies that would entail austerity measures and cuts on public spending on essential services like education, you know, health, housing, and all these things that working class people are voting for, as well as a public works program that have, you know, been a promise of jobs in the areas of EPWP and many other areas, right? Despite all of that, they may very well make some concessions to try and buy the support of the working class for this government of national unity. That, of course, will shape how exactly our rejection, but also our orientation, that process takes form. And that, I think, is the music of the future.
And from the perspective of the working class, what are the some of the primary concerns and priorities that GIUSA really aims to address? I mean, you've mentioned some of them, especially in response to the outcomes of these elections, but also looking at the broader political environment.
Look, the reason that the working class has rejected the entire establishment is that when people fought against apartheid, right, it was obviously, I mean, there is something about, and I think this is the point I was making earlier on, about just being ruled by a minority of a racial caste that dominate every sector of the economy. There's a problem with that, and that's what essentially we call the national question. But there's much more than that. The people who are fighting for housing, education, for jobs, and of course, were appalled by a level of inequalities. Now, when you look at the record of the black majority government and the ANC in the past 30 years, by every single measure, it has been a disaster for the working class. Look at the levels of unemployment. Today, we are standing at over 11 million. Some people are saying we're actually at 12.6 million unemployed. When you use an expanded definition of unemployment in this country, overwhelming majority of these people have no form of income whatsoever. The roads are not working. There are potholes everywhere. The housing crisis is not being resolved. It's actually deepening. Where in 1995, we had 1.5 million housing units in housing backlog. Today, that housing backlog stands at 3.7 million houses, right? When you look at access to education, just look at the recent figures that have been released. It's not just a basic education. 60% of black students drop out on their first years at university because of lack of support and other things and so on. A white English-speaking student is 16 times more likely to succeed than an African black-speaking, an African black-speaking black person. That shows you it's not just a question of knowledge of language. It's actually a class issue. Access to accommodation, access to financial aid. So I can go on and on, including the crisis of water, the crisis of service delivery, by every single measure. And that is the reason that you see particularly the sections of the urban working class, where life in particular wasn't the same as it was in rural areas where there was nothing that apartheid did. In urban areas, there were roads. Under ANC, they have potholes. There was water. Under ANC, that water is not reliable because of breaking down of infrastructure. There was electricity. Under ANC, there's no shedding. So they see the quality of their life going down, especially also in the face of the rising cost of living crisis that the ANC is unable to manage, except through a neoliberal interest rates or monetarist policies that have devastated not only the working class, but the middle class. Particularly high interest rates that has made sure that 26 million credit active people in this country are losing houses, are losing homes, in many ways eroding even what meager wealth and asset base they've built, and in so doing, widening the inequalities in terms of distribution of wealth and assets.
And looking ahead, what strategies and tactics does GIUSA then plan to implement to ensure that your interests of the working class are indeed protected, but also advance amidst these evolving political dynamics?
We've got to rebuild the workers' movement. You see, the part of the strategy of the capitalist class in the past 30 years has been to carry out a brutal restructuring, which, of course, does mean that today, overwhelming majority of working class people are on minimum wages, like half of the workers are on minimum wage, and those that aren't on minimum wage, 75%, including those on minimum wage, 75% of workers in this country are earning below 6,000 rand. That is a criminal indictment against the ANC and its achievements, or rather failures, to be more precise. Now, what we do need is to rebuild the workers' movement, because one of the strategies that they've used is restructuring in a form of casualization of labor, which is increasing and it's only going to accelerate under ANC. I mean, of the 96,000 jobs that were created last year, 82,000 of them were temporary or casual labor. So we are seeing that, and that accompanied by the proposal that they are making to further attack the right to strike, which they've already, limited. It means we are in for a class war. That is what this actually government of national unity pose for the working class. And what we need to do is to get down to rebuilding our organization, the labor movement, the civics, and making sure that we unite them around a program that will make sure that workers are no longer fighting alone, as if their struggles have nothing to do with each other, but also their struggles have nothing to do with the struggles of communities. Because let's be clear about it. The quality of your wage, it depends on how many unemployed siblings, children, parents, and, people you've got to be taking care of. And it is workers who need public housing because their wages can't afford it. It is workers' children who need access to free education. It is workers who need access to free basic services, including water, electricity, in order that the quality of even the poor wages that they get is actually elevated than when they have to be paying that, particularly in the light of the rising cost of living crisis. So we need to rebuild our primary organization. We need to unite them. But more than that, we need a political strategy to say, how do we take the capitalist class out of power politically and economically through a nationalization of the key sectors of the economy on the basis of the democratic control and management of the workers that will ensure that the mines, the banks, the factories and the farms do belong to the working class, and that economy can be used to overcome the curse of unemployment, and what wealth there is in industrial capacity is used to build the roads, the house, and of course to create jobs for everybody, so that we have the quality of life that was a promise of 1994.
And how can solidarity and collaboration within the workers' movement then strengthen this response to the political challenges and also opportunities that are emerging from these reflections that you've given?
At one hand, we are far apart, but I also think that the logic of the current situation will compel many of us closer. So let's look at one of the biggest problems that is facing the workers' movement at Black Bloc Unity. It's a question of the tripartite alliance in which the biggest organization of labor continue to be there. Now, it should be telling. The fact that the ANC has agreed to enter into alliance on terms with the DA that it has rejected over decades, with the SACP and the COSATU, it must clarify the class character of the ANC as a party, that they think they have more in common, they will be more agreeable with the DA, that they've given the right of veto. Because look at that agreement of government of national unity. What does it say? It says that decisions will be taken by consensus, right? But where it is failing is sufficient consensus. That sufficient consensus is defined as a 60% of National Assembly seats of the government of national unity parties. That means in a situation where MK and EFF are out of that government of national unity and there are no prospects of them getting, especially given that the DA is also given the right to have a say on who comes in and out, it means that the only way that the ANC can ever take a decision on the question of legislations, of policy, appointment of ministers, all of that depends on the right of veto wielded by a racist party of white privilege and monopoly capitalism, which has been rejected and has not been able to break out of that white minority support that it built over ages. And what does that then say to you? It says to you that the ANC, once again, it reveals its fundamental class character as a part of monopoly capitalism itself, and hence it finds a comfort in a joint decision-making process which it rejected with the SACP and COSATU, who mobilized elections after elections. So I do think that the experience under a government of national unity, which would actually mean a government effectively on the basis of the policies of the ANC and the DA that has been rejected over years by COSATU and the working class, would actually clarify the many members of COSATU and would actually pull them out of the alliance. They already have a concrete resolution, by the way, which leadership of COSATU decided to subvert through some declarations and other things, which are meaningless. So we think that present an opportunity on the one hand. But I think much more than COSATU is the fact that the working class has not stopped struggling, regardless of what is happening in its organization. We have the highest number of protests in this country per capita. What does it mean? In all the main theaters of working class struggle, in communities, in campuses, on the industrial plane, the working class is continuing to struggle against its poverty, against its exploitation, and of course, the conditions of the colonial slavery that they have been condemned to. And I think we need a strategy, and that's what we are trying to do at level of SAFTU, at level of working class summit that we convened, which was attended by over 170 delegates, where we are trying to work out a strategy to, one, find ways in which we can actively support all the strikes that are taking place in communities, in amongst workers, and of course in other areas and so on, but also linking them in a movement that not only can present a united front in which lies the power of the working class, but actually can discuss a political strategy to say, how do we make sure that there's a political representation of the working class? How do we make sure that we present a socialist alternative to all these crises of capitalism?
Thank you so much for your time, President of GIUSA, Mamitlwe Sibe, sharing his profound insights and perspectives on the reflections released by GIUSA regarding these recent elections, but also the political crisis of bourgeoisie representation. His expertise have illuminated just the complexities of the class struggle, governance, as well as the implications on workers' movement here in South Africa.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.